back from Australia and ready to join us this hour, Dave Greinich, and much, much more. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. We're back in the same room where it was just you and I for a few days, and the action has turned up. There's people all over the place. The press starting to file in from literally all over the world.
Yeah,
sitting down here, we're rocking Radio Row here. It's fine. It's great to be here for the 39th Breeders' Cup, the third one here at Keeneland. And we were talking the other day, out of the 38, I think I've missed four, maybe five. I know I missed the two here at Keeneland, and I didn't make the two at Gulfstream, and probably missed another one in there somewhere. But I don't know. When November rolls around, I seem to head to wherever the Breeders' Cup is, and I've been lucky enough during my time at Santa Anita 20 years. We did seven of them there, so very familiar with the comings and goings of what it takes to put one of these shows on, and believe me, it's a major operation. And from what I've seen so far at Keeneland, Steve, they got their stuff together here. They're having meetings over here to get that right. I know the parking getting in, the signs were good here today. All the little stuff that matters come in here. Everyone's got their name tag where the press is supposed to be sitting, and more importantly, the racing department. Keeneland here with Keeneland and Dora going and see how they had the horses coming on the track yesterday. Everything seems to be in order. We're on go here, Steve.
Well, a couple of things that will get feathered in as the morning gets going, and post time today, of course, 11:55 gets the action rolling. Second level allowance this morning, and then the first of the the first stake is the marathon goes off at 2:15. 3 o'clock is first post for Breeders' Cup action with the Juvenile Turf Sprint. There was a piece of news overnight from yesterday, late afternoon, actually. Feel badly, as it happens, for the connections of G. Laurie, who a lot of people actually had interest in the Juvenile Fillies Turf. Her name did not come up all that often, but there were plenty of people that thought, with William Buick and blinkers going on, that Graham Motion's filly had a shot, and she spiked the temperature. And so she is out. That's the only scratch that I've come across so far, and we'll get them this morning. Marty McGee might have a little bit more to add to that. But that does get Vicky Oliver in with Bling at 30-1. So be aware of that, and the rest of that kind of information will fold in as we get rolling. And other than that, try to fund your account now, early, if you can. I always suggest that in case there's any hang-ups. What do you got?
You know, that's a good call there on the on funding your account. Don't wait till the last minute. I know because some of the ADWs have restrictions on how much you can put in daily. So hopefully you started yesterday, but put some in today, and also load up for tomorrow too. And remember, there's five non Breeders' Cup races to start the day here. There's a pick five that includes all those. There's a pick four that starts on the second race, which is normal. So get involved early. Some real good races here. I know. As a racing secretary at the track you're having it at, you're not too worried about the Breeders' Cup races. You're only worried about the races that you got to make on your own. And Ben Huffman and his crew did a great job of the five races here today and the two tomorrow they got to make. So check those out. Bob Baffert is making himself present in I think three of those races. And I think as Sid mentioned the other day, I think he's coming here to win a few races, so keep your eye on him. But the action starts, like Steve said, 11:55, first Breeders' Cup race at 3 o'clock Eastern time. And if you're not ready by now, you're going to get some more good information today from our guests. So get your pencil out again and try and – I know at some points you get information overload, and at some point you just got to write some stuff down and put some numbers down and go with it. I know I put a few wagers in last night, so I don't have to worry about it and being rushed.
Which is an absolute option. The advance, the Saturday advance wagering is open to people if you want to just get some of the, maybe the multis particularly, if you want to get them in. We should also mention a couple. These are Saturday scratches, but Informative is out of the Dirt Mile, so that now is a 10-horse field. And not necessarily a horse that, I mean, is going to be a monster price because it's Uriah St. Louis, but it was not a horse that was going to impact really the pace. And then coming out of the Filly and Mare Sprint, you can take Hot Peppers out from Broody Rod as well. So that's now a dozen, a field of 12 for tomorrow's Filly and Mare Sprint, led by the defending winner, I suppose, right? CC. Marty, I've got Frank McGoey, who has got just had a window right now. Let me just say good morning to Frank. Frank, I appreciate this, and I know you're clocking at New Orleans at Fairgrounds, and of course the meet opens in just 2.5 weeks. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you,
Frank? Terrific. Just to take a couple of minutes. I know this was our only window. I wanted to get a couple of your best ideas.
Okay. We're talking today.
Yeah. Start well today and tomorrow.
All right. I was more encouraged when I went back and reviewed some of the results at Keeneland from the last Breeders' Cup, when it seemed like the turf course played, outside wasn't bad, because I was really impressed with the Platinum Queen watching her races. I kept watching replays of all our horses, And I couldn't separate them at all. And I just came to the conclusion, finally, Steve, that if I can't separate them, it's because they're not separating themselves. And more I watch this horse, I know she was getting weight in those races that she's coming out of. But, I mean, the outside post didn't bother Mongolian Saturday. And I just think this horse looks like, something that stands out in this bunch. I don't know. It's not a huge opinion, but if I was going to be taking a swing in that first race, that would be who I'd be looking at with Holly Doyle. I'm curious, has that been a popular opinion?
I think she's been mentioned just about everyone. I think just about all of our guests have mentioned her in the mix. It hasn't necessarily been on talk. I think the 12 hole scares a little bit, and the fact that she's never made a turn.
Well, the I don't know. It's interesting, Frank. In fact, Marty, let me ask you.
She's made a turn somewhere.
Exactly.
Made a turn in a race, but I'm sure she's made a turn somewhere. That's not going to stop
anything
different
from betting. Marty, in the first race of the show, in the Filly and Mare? Not the Filly and Mare, in the Juvenile Turf Sprint. What? Who'd you end up with?
Well, Bic, let's see here. Good morning, Bic.
Good morning, McGee, folks.
The Platinum Queen. I mean, the whole thing about beating older horses, I don't even know if I've ever seen that. But, I've seen it with Standardbreds, I think, but not, I don't remember Thoroughbreds.
Well, Frank thinks that she's a standout, I mean, I'm going to use her defensively, but it took so long for a European to win one of the turf sprints, that Glass Slippers, and frankly, it took a miraculous ride by that guy, by that journeyman. Was it Eat? Right? And it had been a source of frustration for the Europeans, the juvenile, not just the juvenile, but the turf sprints in general here.
But, I mean, she beat older horses.
Yep.
But in a group one. And she has the open air outside box with the air fresh and clear.
Actually, let me ask you this, though, because Frank was just talking about the turf. It may be, the air may be fresh and clear, but the turf may be chewed up out there.
It might, because they've been saving
the inside
grass for these races.
Right.
So I don't know. Does that mean it's better? I don't know.
It,
or might it be boggier?
we haven't had enough rain for it to be boggy.
Well, okay.
I struggled with this.
On face value, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I can't.
No, I know. You can't hear me.
I was going to say, I struggled with it for the longest time, and I just came to the conclusion that, well, if I can't separate the Americans, it's because they're all pretty much the same. And so I just said, I'm going to get some value with the outside post because, you know, people are going to be thinking, well, it's never made a turn, has never been outside like this, you know, gets this kind of field. Right. But every time I watched the races, it was like, this is a runner. And, I mean, the horse that the one that beat her that's going to be running in the sprint on Saturday, I mean, that's a real runner. I can't remember the
Highland,
name right now. I don't have it in front of me.
Princess.
Yeah. Yes.
Highfield Princess.
Correct. I can't separate the Americans, and if this horse can hang with Highfield Princess, that's who I'm on in that race for sure.
All right. Very good. Give us a couple more for today and then a couple for Saturday.
I think the race will set up really good for Chop Chop in the seventh.
Yep.
I think she's doing great. In the eighth race, I think this is probably, I like the outside horse. I don't know how you pronounce it, Zagara. And I think
Zagara.
I've got good information, from my Ballydoyle friends that they're very high on Meditate. And then I am going down with Paxawala pretty heavily in the tenth today.
Well, Paxawala has got plenty of attention around the country. All right, how about a run-through for Saturday's plays, Frank, and we'll let you get back to the clocking.
Yeah, let me pull it up real quick, Steve. Hang on one second.
Frank McGoey joining us. And, Frank, you're obviously, you guys will be in the BCBC, yes?
I will be. Yep.
I grappled with bringing you because I didn't know if you I didn't want to steal your best ideas, but you're always so generous.
No, listen, you know, it's funny. It seems like people can't beat you with your own opinions because they always try to be a little bit different. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I completely understand.
All right, looking at Saturday quick, I think Cody's Wish is a brick through a window. Absolute cinch. I think she'll run by those as she pleases. But it looked fantastic on the track yesterday, by the way, galloping on everything I saw. I am all over the three horses, Nashua, Above the Curve, and Tuesday, all three of them coming out of that same race. I think they are much the best at this distance. I'll probably be leaning towards one of them. Nothing fancy in the sprint. It certainly looks like Jackie's Warrior is going to control things. But I do think Elite Power will move forward again. I just think he's got a lot of room for improvement, and he would be the only upsetter in my mind. I don't think that's a great post for Kamari, who's the only other horse that figures on figures.
Right.
Then we go to, I think Modern Games, listen, I didn't like the way Modern Games didn't look too smooth galloping over the turf course to me yesterday. I'll be taking a swing against. I know she's going to be a big favorite. I think Annapolis could move forward again, and I think you'll see a much better race from Order of Australia coming back.
Unbelievable. Interesting. He's certainly in better form.
Has that been a popular opinion?
It's been enough of an opinion that people. In fact, I'll ask Marty. Marty, what'd you end up doing in the mile?
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
I got Annapolis.
I think you did have Annapolis. Now that you say that.
No. Modern Games, Regal Glory, Annapolis.
Okay. All right. Very good. Marty's idea.
Yep.
Annapolis has got to work out another trip to me, Frank. I mean that was pretty miraculous. Last time,
It was, but he rode up a position last time out of the gate, and I think he will again, and I think the two confirmed front runners in that race will leave him some room to operate that he might be able to, I mean, Smooth Like Straight's going, and then that horse that Victor Espinosa's riding is going. He may be able to just drop right in, well-placed off of them. I just know when he asked, he was there twice for him during the race. Looked like he asked early for position, got it, and then when he asked late, he split horses and finished well. Just
yeah,
looked
he
like
did.
He probably got another forward move in him.
All right.
I'm extremely looking forward to the Distaff. I don't have a huge opinion. Ness looks like, every time I see Ness, she looks better and better on the track.
Yep.
Clarier's got a spot in my heart. I've done well with her. She's going to run much better. She looks good. It's between the top three in there. I'm convinced of
sure.
that. In the mile and a half race, I like Nation's Pride. I thought Nation's Pride looks a lot better.
Wow.
Stretching out further the other day. What you wowing about?
You asked about a popular opinion. It seems like everybody's aboard Nation's Pride. It seems like everybody is suddenly, leaning that way. There's been a lot of momentum.
I can give you a little insight on some of the O'Brien horses. I talked to my buddy who works with them. Broom is finally running for himself. She was in to help a couple make some pace last time in the last couple of races, but he said just trouble getting out of the gate. And who else did they have in there? Oh, they think that Stone Age is they think Stone Age has not shown what he's capable of, and they really think he's going to wind up being a good horse. So, being cocky, I told them that they couldn't beat Nation's Pride, so they'll probably beat me on the wire.
All right, and then Frank, the classic. How are you approaching it?
Period.
All right.
I think we'll see something special. And in the words of my friend at Winston Galladour, I asked him if he got a chance to see Flight Line in person. He said, "He's a big unit." That was his answer. He's a big unit. So yeah.
The Randy Johnson of thoroughbreds.
There you go.
I love it. Frank McGowey, everybody. Frank, best of luck today, tomorrow in the BCBC, and maybe talking to you again after a BCBC win.
Hopefully I'll see you in town. I know I'll see Marty's brother, Paul. We'll be at the same bar every Friday night, so come on down.
Marty doesn't have the headset on, but Frank McGowey just said he knows that he'll be seeing your brother because they'll be at the same joint every Friday night.
Sports Beat?
Yeah, that's it. He knows where it is.
Sports Beat.
Yeah, with Monty.
Yep. Thank God we shipped him to Kentucky to hang with you for a while.
I love it. Frank, thanks so much for this.
All right, good luck, Steve. I'll see you when you make your circus round here in a few months.
Without fail, maybe twice, actually, the way things are shaping up. Frank McGowey, everybody, who's got about
good
as great
a...
Thank you, Frank. About as strong an opinion as there is anywhere. Two-time BCBC, the famous first two runnings, the McGowey team the wins. Marty, I wanted to get Frank in. This was the only window, so I appreciate the patience. And here we are.
Frank hangs around with Monty McNulty, who hangs around with my brother and me a little bit. And So I did. Is he still the only two-time winner of the BCBC?
Yes.
Is anybody else?
Yes, I mean, there's been a number of people that have won and had top 10 finishes, and but that was the crazy, the McGowey Helmers 2 years in a row, the first two runnings, it was the craziest 1-2 finish. Impossible. I mean,
it
was impossible for it to end that way 2 years in a row. The mathematical, I asked it to, we tried to figure out what the mathematic possibilities were of having the same two, finish that way 2 years in a row. Crazy.
One of these days, Alice, we'll all throw in some money and do the BCBC. What do you say, Marty?
I need to get out of this gig first, but yeah, I'm ready.
Not that we haven't seen you cash plenty of tickets over the years. Marty, an overview first going into
Man, the weather has been so good here the last 4 to 6 weeks, whatever. And Keeneland's getting lucky again. You and I were talking about how our old stomping grounds, Rick, at Monmouth Park, they have the infrastructure there. And then it rained, unfortunately, the 1 year they had it, and nobody ever talked again about going back to Monmouth Park.
Which is so unfair.
And it seems like we are just as much at risk here at Keeneland for that type of weather, and it's never happened, so they keep bringing it back. So I would like to see it go back to Jersey at some point.
That'd be great.
Right. You know what? Think about this. I just talked to Gina, my wife, last night. She goes, it's cold here, which reminds me of when we had the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita the year before it was going to come here. They were checking temperatures there. Now it's beautiful here, and it's in the 50s in California. So, but you're right. You know what? As you know, at the Monmouth one, it was like this for 10 days.
It was so beautiful the Saturday before. I could. It's just
right?
Like luck couldn't hold out. And it is luck.
Because
they're talking about it maybe tomorrow, not
4 to 6.
Great.
4 to 6. There's a right now a light rain possibility late in the afternoon. That according to Dark Sky. In fact, let me check it again. Yeah, they're talking 34% to 28% between 4 and 6.
This is one of those weathermen things that hasn't rained in a while here, right? So they see it and they jump up and down like rain.
But these are all computerized models. This is minor.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's not much, but they see rain and that's the headline. Was the headline this morning? It might rain tomorrow. So
well, you know,
it's going to be fine.
They're running. It's talking about darkness. They're running the classic at like 5:45, and then they're running another race at 6:20. They say, and sunset is 6:35. So if the skies get dark, it might be like Seeking the Gold versus 49er and Ali Sheba. Yeah.
In the gloaming.
Yeah. Where if you go back and look at the tape, it looks like it's light, but it wasn't.
No, yeah.
It was whatever they do with the camera apertures or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, exactly.
So
exactly.
It was pitch black. And then people got to go to these parking lots afterwards.
That's a good point. Yeah. On the hill and the meadow.
Yeah.
Well, the opportunity, Marty, for... You know, the wagering successes, and do you want to walk through and see where you ended up? I did not get the consensus yet.
Let's just hit the highlights. Chop Chop is my best bet today.
All right.
Loved her race.
Okay.
What I really liked was how Brad talked to me about her a couple weeks post Kentucky Downs and before the Alcibiades. I remember saying, "Who's in there?" And I didn't really know. This was about a week out, and he goes, "Well, I love my filly." And she ran huge in the Alcibiades. And, you know, I don't like that it's the short stretch run, but nonetheless, she's well drawn enough. And in what's a real scramble, you're going to get a price no matter what in the juvenile fillies. But I'm going with Chop Chop in there.
I picked her too. There's too much speed, right? Much pace. Much pace.
And you've got Phil Serpy's horse out there. She's got to go, you would think. And Wonder Wheel has to go, you would think. But Wonder Wheel's not going to get the kind of perfect. I mean, she was ridden so perfectly by Tyler Gaffleone in that last race, in victory. And Mark Cassie, when I talked to him about her, about Wonder Wheel, he said, she tripped up perfectly, but... He thought that she was wandering a little bit. This is the feedback he got from Tyler, and that she's going to run even better this time. So I look for Chop Chop, though, and Rosario to come flying and turn the tables.
I'm on top of Chop Chop as well, and didn't want to eat short prices in here. I've got nothing against Chocolate Gelato. I mean, certainly Fig players are. Got to be respectful. She's paired up, two strong numbers, and so anything along those lines would fit in here. You know, one of the things that particularly with the 2-year-old races that you had to make some decisions about, both the boys and the girls, were the horses that are coming out of New York that went the one turn, and went the one turn on a wet track. And so you're answering two questions in your handicapping, making the transition to a second turn, and getting, you know, how reliable were those performances on wet tracks that, you know, very frequently can be aberrations.
To me, that's a double whammy whereby no thank you on a relatively short price
exactly.
on chocolate gelato. Inside of her and just to the outside of a Chop Chop are the two, in my opinion, wild cards of the group, both atomically number 8 out of those Florida bred races. They all look good when they win by 6 3/4 or 7. And then Grand Love, who Steve asked me since, has absolutely put a line through that. To me, they're the two wild cards in the race.
You mentioned the race at Keeneland had 14 horses, and I think the horses learn a lot more negotiating than Chop Chop had to do, as opposed to a 6-horse field in the slop where, you know, you could kind of do whatever you wanted. In that race, I will say that I watched. My computer was smoking last night as I kept going from race to race. This You're My Girl, the John Terranova filly on a rail. She just never gave it up. I like the way she just hung in and hung in and hung in. Where you thought Chocolate Gelato was just going to go by a couple times in the stretch, she just hung in there. And, you know, for what it's worth, I just liked her grit, whether it's enough to get the job done. But I think she's going to be heard from. I like the post on the inside. Marty, how much... Going a mile, we know there's a problem. But a mile to 16th, is it that big of a deal being
short
outside?
Stretch and the short stretch portion?
You would think it is. I mean, because are you talking about horses drawn far outside?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, getting over there to the first turn and being able to save some ground is often a difficult task. I do not envy Flavian Pratt here on the outside horse for Chad, Raging Sea. I do think that You're My Girl will trip out, and a horse that nobody has talked about all week. I ended up writing about how nobody was talking about her. Is the only two-time graded winner in the field, number 3, and Tell Me No Lies, for Peter Miller. He says, "I love being under the radar. I love when people are dismissing us." He's won 5 Breeders' Cup races since 2017. None of them were favored. This filly's 8-1 on the line. She'll be about that today. Her buyer speed figures are under the other horses. She was long odds in winning both the Del Mar Debutante and the Chandelier. I would not overlook her. If I'm sprinkling, I'm definitely using her in some of my plays.
She kind of reminds me of the horse recently, Princess Norda, came out of California that won a little bit more fashionably, but the figures weren't that good, remember? And she got knocked a little bit.
Isn't she more like the Peter Urton horse?
Champagne Room?
Champagne Room.
Well, I mean, she wasn't as successful as right. Tell Me No Lies.
What? She played, didn't she? Wasn't she Boxcars?
She was 33-1
was
or
she
something.
That? Okay.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
right.
She was
yeah.
big.
All right. Yeah, but the two races that those two fillies were talking about won. They won these both, and... You know, coming out of California, there was rolling. That was the Baffert horse. Remember, it was a Princess Noor, right? But everyone
right.
kept saying, looks good on film, but the figures were low, and it turned out that the figures were right. She didn't run that well in the Breeders'
well,
Cup.
Well, things don't lie, as Andy famously says.
They don't lie, but they don't always apply to the next
like
race.
That. Thank you.
That's fine. I won't argue that. I won't argue that portion of it. Interesting. Nick Tamaro too was felt that if there was somebody else that she was a candidate for that. I also thought that that there were a number of horses that beyond the two obvious, meaning Chocolate Gelato and Chop Chop, there were like another 5 or 6 that all had performances last time that. That are right, and you mentioned a couple of them. Atomically, who I do like, even that Alma Rosa, it put a number up that is good enough. And some people asked yesterday after we had the Kenny Kirchner visit, and we talked about the reverse tri-key. The horse of, if you think that And Tell Me No Lies has got a forward move after that series of performances that can impact the race significantly, then why can't Sabra Tough make the same exact forward move to be at least 3rd at 47-1?
It's our man, the upset king.
I don't buy into that whole thing with Dallas, but that horse, she's run the same fig over and over and over again. At some point, she will move forward, and she's going to be closing into a pace, and she can be third at Boxcars.
You wouldn't believe how often I actually play what you're talking
about. The reverse tri-key.
I'll play a horse like Cybertough, third and fourth and Super Dupers. You start off with your key, you know, the horses you think can win, blah,
yep,
blah, blah. You fill it in, and you just hope for, you know, for the slug-up horse, I call it.
Well, that's what that's been the at-the-races, you know, gimmick bet since Kenny Kirchner. And by the way, for those that listened to Kenny yesterday, in one of those crazy things, when I went to put up yesterday's listing on Facebook, you know, gives you the memory. So I always look through the memories, especially when we're at Derby and you know, there's great photos. And Kenny Kirchner introduced the reverse tri-key exactly 12 years ago yesterday when we were at Churchill in 2010. And that's when it first was, and he is back on to talk about it yesterday, 12 years later to the day.
Well, I love doing it for the Super Dupers where you use it third and fourth. You know, you bet a
yep
dime here and
yep
play a $19.20 ticket and then play it the same way with the you flip around the third and the fourth positions and cross your fingers and hope for the best.
What's been your best, I'll slip this question in, what's been your biggest or best or most memorable Breeders' Cup score?
You know what? I loved Last Tycoon at 35-1
back
in 86, and I bet something like $8 to win and 8 to place, and it carried me the whole day. And that was Yves Saint Martin, was it not? At Santa Anita in 86.
Unbelievable.
I loved that one.
Unbelievable. That was the third cup, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you did. You know, for those that said $8, he also bet $8 on Rich Strike.
I did bet $8.
I know
Rich
you
Strike
did.
And
I
it saved all the hundreds I bet on Zandon.
Was that in the mile? That was in the mile.
Last time
that,
yes,
that was because yes that was Manila won the turf. And
yeah,
that was one of my. I wrote down. I was writing down some most memorable and Manila day, and that's the day. This lady's no secret. And I made up this goofy sign in my garage the day before. A bunch of us were going down there, and I had this plan. I ended up, it was like a 2x3. I wrote up this lady's no secret with lady's secret on top of each other. And I brought it in with me. So all of a sudden, here comes the distaff, and we're like, let's go. Where are we going? I said, we're going down to the winner's circle. I went down to the winner's circle. I had there was a little, like a milk crate there. I stood up. After she wins, I get up and I hold the sign up, this lady's no secret. They're walking into the winner's circle, and all of a sudden the photographers are like, click, 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 you know, taking a picture of me holding this thing up. Anyway.
Do you have a copy of it?
Oh, copy of it. Are you kidding me?
The picture?
Like, it shows up in the Blood Horse. Okay.
Oh, you never told me this.
Oh, you're kidding me.
This story.
Oh, so I go to work at Santa Anita in 2000. And here comes Ray, who works for Bob Benoit. She goes, oh, Rick, we've been saving this for you. The picture's in the yearbook, the Oak Tree yearbook, me holding up the review of the Breeders' Cup, right?
Unbelievable.
And so go down the 20 years later, they do a little story for me in Trainer magazine. And I said, you got to do this. I sent them the photo, so they got me holding that up. And the headline's from racing fan to racing secretary. It's really cool. And oh yeah, I still have the sign for it. It's in my house.
Oh, that's
it's tremendous. It's a classic. I'll have to show it to
you. I love that. That reminds me of my own story, and I'll be real brief.
No, no.
My first ever Derby was 1974, so this will be my 50th one coming up. I was interviewed for about 90 seconds to 2 minutes on Wave TV. I'm 14 years old. I cannot find the footage. I'll pay anybody $2,500 if they can find the footage of local Derby coverage in 1974. Melissa Forsyth, who, God rest her soul, just died, interviewed me. She couldn't have been but 20. She had to be in her early 20s. But I want that for next May when I'm at my 50th straight Derby.
Well, since we're doing this, my parents took me to see To Tell the Truth at Studio City in Manhattan. CBS Television City, not Studio City. And Dr. Debakey, the South African heart doctor, was one of the guests before he became famous. This must be like 1971. And so when we walked in, they handed everybody sheets of paper, and they explained, you know, we're going to have a heart specialist, and we want people to write questions about heart, you know, taking care about heart care. And so my mother actually wrote both questions because my grandfather had a bad heart. And oh, that's tremendous. That's you got to tweet that, please. You got to tweet that.
You got to put it out when you do the your tweet post show today. You got to put that in there.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So
my mother wrote both questions with my grandfather. Her father had a bad heart, and they said we're going to pick five people from the studio audience to then ask the doctor the questions. And so between tapings, they said, "All right, here are the five people." And the first one they said, Gloria Bick, Manchester, Connecticut. And so my mother's like, ooh. So she goes down. And then too late, Gary Moore was the host at the time, to tell the truth. And then 2 seconds later, he said, here she is again, Gloria Bick. So they said, okay, well, the husband, okay, Mr. Bick. And so they got $100 for both. They got $100 each. And it would mean the world to me to get the tape of that episode.
Have you tried?
Apparently, it's owned, all the To Tell the Truth tapes are owned by a UK production company, and they will send you like a VHS tape or something. And I can't. I've got to identify what the episode was. I got to go find it. Anyway, it was the craziest thing. And DeBakey loved my mother's question. My mother, is it a old wives' tale that shoveling snow is bad for the heart? And he said, it absolutely is true, because not only is it a strain, but because how cold it is outside, it's an additional strain. So he said, that's a wonderful, I'll never forget that. And I was sitting alone in the audience.
And now, what's funny about this thing is, I mean, this is how well this planned. I actually wrote my name on it because I knew this was going to be a hit. I wrote my name on it, Breeders' Cup there, so you could say, hey, that's me. And notice what's around my neck? The sunglasses. It's not
so
new.
So ridiculous.
Right?
So
1986.
Ridiculous. Right.
Classic. And believe it or not, my wife, it's a long story, but I'm wearing this shirt that says California Girls on it, and my wife found that shirt like 3 weeks ago. So I have
the actual shirt.
Love it.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Anyway, it's a million to one. Carry on.
Obligatory tomorrow's my Philly and Mayor sprint.
All right.
What else? Nashua over Moira. In the Philly Mayor.
Why is everybody hot for Moira?
Well, I'm a big Kevin Attard fan.
Well, so am I, and his last trip here was a nightmare.
Yeah, so Jackie's Warrior, I wanted to pick against him, but I can't. Malathot over Nest, Warlike Goddess over the Boys, Flightline over Epicenter, and Rich Strike. So I got to go to work, Bick.
Marty McGee, everybody. The one and only DRF McGee. Thank you.
See at the windows.
Hey, let me get a picture of the two of you. Nick Luck should be here. Should have been here actually about 5 minutes ago. So we'll. Oh, you can't do that, Rick. You can't drop that thing like that. There we go. Look at that. Beautiful. Thank you, Marty McGee, everybody. I wonder if we should turn around and reach for Dave Grenig.
I got a quick story.
Go ahead,
Marty just reminded me. He said to me, Concrete City. So Marty and I met 1992. I'm kind of fresh off the boat, and here he comes. And we're at beautiful Monmouth Park, and, you know, it's shore, beautiful mountains, and, you know. All summer, having a great time, and so we head up to the Meadowlands, and I think it was Marty's first Meadowlands, and I don't know, we're doing some interview, and, you know, and I said something like, well, I did say, I go, we go from, like, the beautiful shores to Concrete City, and we move on, and so here comes opening day, the lead article, and it's Marty McGee, boom, 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 like the third paragraph down, it's like, hey, we're at Concrete City, and he quotes my name down there, right? I don't know what's going on. I go, hey.
Cow handle or clean.
Yeah, I'm like quoted in the form. Oh, this is great. So that night when we're racing, I get a phone call. Hey, come over to the executive offices, right? I go, okay, oh, what's going on over here? I go down there, shut the door, and it wasn't Hal. I forget the guy, the gentleman's name that was the GM then. It was like the Meadowlands guy, and he goes, throws the paper. He goes, is this you? And I go, yeah. He goes, well, we don't like the Meadowlands being referred to as Concrete City. And I was like, uh-oh. And kind of walked out of the door there, but it was pretty funny. I told Marty the next day, I go, "Hey, thanks a lot." But it was perfect. I said it.
That's great.
And you know, so every time
I
I said what I said, and I stand behind it and disprove it. I told him, no, I didn't say that, but I learned my lesson there, a good lesson early. Unless you tell them, please don't print this, they're going to print it. But so we've been friends ever since. But that that was a classic.
All right, Nick Luck is about 5 minutes away, Rick, and so rather than reach for Dave Grenig, we'll hang in, and here's all the noise you hear in the background are photographers getting their bibs.
I thought it was like a soup line or something.
Well, it is. I mean, with them, they have to wear those photography bibs, and so they're all lined up for their credential, what amounts to a, you know, the thing that allows them to be on the racetrack.
What you mentioned, what if you can recollect, what was your biggest score?
In terms of an individual, well, that pick five with Queen's Trust was monstrous, but the best day, the best Breeders' Cup, was 2000, and it was almost crazy the way it unfolded. I was doing the barbecue, Carolina barbecue, and barbecue Bill Mayberry and I, we were betting together, and we had actually built a little bit of a bankroll the day before, and you know, this is before it was a two-day event. So the first race, we're in line, and I'm looking at the board, and I see Spain is a crazy price, and I said, was it the Juvenile Fillies, or was it the first three races, the Juvenile Fillies, the Distaff? We nailed Caressing, we nailed Spain, and as it happens, Bill was very close to Bill Perry, the late Bill Perry, and so you know, his miler, the mile was the third race, and so we basically bet. He ends up getting beat, but we bet it right. So we're up thousands in the first 90 minutes, not even first hour. There's Nick, and then comes my best opinion of the whole thing was Honest Lady in the sprint, and hit the try in the sprint with Kona Gold. Come over here, Nick. Kona Gold.
She came running.
Honest Lady second, and Bet on Sunshine third, Marty's brother.
Right.
And More Than Ready was fourth. Caller ID was fifth. Nick Luck has been on the run, has been on the move. He's back from Australia. And look at you. You look fresh as a daisy.
Am I all right?
You look tremendous.
I was a bit worried. I was battling with the Kentucky State Troopers to get into the right gate. So,
unbelievable.
Apologies for the slightly later period.
Not at all. Not at all.
But it's very good to be here.
First and foremost, was that your first Melbourne Cup?
First time to Australia.
Ever?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Give everybody a snapshot.
Loved it. All that it was billed to be. The place is spectacular. Flemington Racecourse. The weather was terrible. 45 degrees and raining, but never mind that. If you'd said to me it was going to be, you know, low 70s in Kentucky and mid-40s in Melbourne, I'd have said, I think you got that the wrong way around. But anyway, that's the way it is. I'm happy with it now. No, it was great. Flemington's a beautiful race course, very much designed, built, and run for the consumer, for the punter, for the people, and it really works. It's modern, it's clean, it's smart. The race itself has a genuine connection to the public consciousness. Look, so does the Grand National, so does the Kentucky Derby. I'm not saying everything they do is great and everything we do isn't, but there is no doubt that when you go around one of the world's great cities in the build-up to that race, people are genuinely touched by horse racing. And for a fan, there's nothing better. And I think they promote fandom in a way that you definitely would appreciate, because it's something that you do for 3 hours every single day of the week.
Well, and it pervades the country. I mean, there's little, you know, there's little tiny country tracks that...
Well, huge place, not that many people in it.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of them, if they don't love the sport, they at least have some knowledge of it. At least it's sort of on their on their radar.
How many days did you get to? How many days beforehand did you get to spend there?
I was there for 6 days before the Cup. I did Derby Day, Victoria Derby Day, which is obviously one of the historic days. People still wearing morning coat and whatnot, which was fantastic. I really enjoyed that, and I got enough of a snapshot of the city. I mean, I'd like to go back and spend a bit more time there.
Well, that's racing's ultimate double, obviously, what you just did.
Well, Breeders in Melbourne, yeah. I mean, and that's why I've done it, really, because it's one of the few years where you can do it properly. Normally it goes the other way around. Right, so next year, the plan is already in place to do it again,
nice.
But the other way around. So I get the whole of the build-up to this, and then hair out on Saturday night and hop on a flight from LAX after Santa Anita, and then get there the Monday,
wow.
Lose a day, do Cup on Tuesday, but then stay the week till Champions Day. That's the plan already being put into place. My wife doesn't listen to this show, so it's fine.
And I'm going to pencil that in right now because that
could
sounds...
Do it.
That's what they say is ideal.
Anytime there's a Breeders' Cup in LA, you've got a shot. I mean, the difficult bit of this journey was it's 14 hours Melbourne to LA. You kind of get out of the plane and you think, oh, I'm tired. Then it's waiting 6 hours, then getting on a plane to Chicago, then getting on a puddle jumper down here to Lexington, and you're like, oh. And then my bag was the last one off the carousel.
Of course.
And I was like, yeah, I couldn't see it. And it wasn't there.
And so now you're thinking...
And I'm thinking,
my suits,
this isn't great.
I'm finished.
So I went and peered. You know how they have the flaps that look like a sort of refrigeration flaps at the end of the carousel? Huh. And I went and peered, and there it was.
Is that this morning?
They turned it off before it had actually come
that's
out.
That's hysterical.
No, oh God, no, I'm not that.
No.
I'm not that good.
Wednesday.
I got in...
Wednesday morning.
No, last thing Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
Yeah, so I've only been here a day.
Unbelievable. That whole fortnight, you know, with Randwick and with the Caulfield and the Cox Plate, right?
Yeah. If you could do all that, then you've done well, yeah.
It's special. It's very special. I'm dying to... I so want to go. Here you are, another Breeders' Cup, and in fact, I'm just thinking about the last time we were sitting here, and I've got the pictures of you and me,
the feet,
and
yeah.
LP3, and...
2015. You know. They popped up the other day on Facebook.
That's the best. This edition, Nick, I mean, and you and I have talked a couple of different... We've been a couple of fence posts along the way about the way this was coming together, and then, of course, the deck of cards gets shuffled from the European side, and we end up with, you know, a pretty heady mix of you know, North American-based stars, real stars, and a superstar as a headliner, and then a you know, not everything came together. There was the unfortunate Blackbeard injury and retirement, which was really not, you know, it's one thing for a horse to miss the Breeders' Cup, it's another thing to never race again. But talk a little bit about you know, how you feel this came together and the expectations for the next basically 28 hours.
There were a few more tantalizing propositions dangled our way. I mean, you mentioned Blackbeard, the juvenile. He would have been interesting because he was a good story. Bay Bridge would have been good in the turf. He was a good story. AR would have added a bit of quality to that race. I think that's the race that's maybe suffered most of late in terms of defections. I'd have liked to have seen Saffron Beach here. She came out. So there were a few horses that we were shown, you know, we want to go to the Breeders' Cup. They didn't arrive. But that always happens. We've still got, I think, a pretty solid contingent from Europe, if no absolute superstar, I think would be fair to say. A lot of turf horses, a lot of juveniles and a lot of sprinters. Yeah, areas in which we haven't always excelled. So do you see what I mean?
Yes.
You're basing quite a lot of your perceived success in two areas where there's the chaos factor is quite high,
and it's funny. It's funny that you bring that up because we talked earlier, and one of our first opinions came from Frank McGoey, and Frank was basically has married himself to the Platinum Queen, and I, you know, and he said, do you finding that a popular opinion? And I mean, she's certainly a popular topic, but I brought up the fact that until Golden Slippers got that miracle ride, these turf sprints have been, you know, a futile
Yeah, it's been hard. It's been hard. But of course, the effect of that was to encourage more people to come and do it.
Yeah.
So it's had a, you know, it's had a self-fulfilling effect.
As I think back at when we started doing them at Santa Anita, when I started doing them at Santa Anita in 2003, and we had seven of them there, the mindset was, gosh, I hope we get, you know, X amount of Europeans. Please, please, please have them show up. And we've gotten to the point now, who's going to show up? You know,
well,
when did that pendulum turn to, hey, we're going to start pointing to the Breeders' Cup?
Well, I think the fact that they introduced the race at Santa Anita, I think it was 08 they had the first out of turf sprint. Because 2003, it was still a one-day deal. And the first 2 years were both at Santa Anita. And that probably didn't help because the other thing people said was, oh, Europeans are used to undulating tracks. Well, no horses are used to going down the hill at Santa Anita, which is great. I love it. It's one of my favorite tracks in the world. But it's not somewhere that, you know, would be anybody's natural home. So I think the fact that there were a couple run there straight off the bat, and it was a bit of shock and awe for horses that thought they were going to do a bit better, and they got completely stoved in. That probably deterred people a little bit from coming
and doing it. I meant basically in general.
There were a lot of them run there, early doors, you know, 6.5 down the hill.
Right.
Desert Code and California Flag.
Well, I remember horses like Star Spangled Banner and ran all right in it. Fleeting Spirit ran okay, didn't she? But, you know,
that miler, there was the one, because we were all excited about the miler. Hammer taught me years ago how to approach the downhill
horse. Well,
obviously
was the horse, wasn't he?
Obviously. Or the one started with an L, one word name that we were in love with. I think finished sixth or seventh. It was a top class miler that was
reverting to sprinting.
Yeah, that was trying. This is probably, I don't know, probably, well, obviously it was 16. Maybe it's further back than I'm, you know, maybe it was in the misdirection years.
So there are better horses running in. Are we still on the juveniles, or are we still on the
older
ones?
No, you can hybrid. You can do both, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Platinum Queen's going to struggle from that gate, particularly with all that pace outside, isn't she? She's just going to get... There's going to be too much pressure.
That was my thinking. That was my thinking. And you know, and everybody keeps saying, you know, oh, she beat Elders.
Receiving 20...
27 pounds!
Exactly.
It's like, whoa. You can't compare them. It's not a fair comparison, per se.
Exactly. She's better judged on her form against two-year-olds, which is very good. But it doesn't read as sexily.
Talk then about Lady Hollywood and about Dramatized, Mischief Magic, Persian Force as alternatives.
I want to ask one more question about Platinum Queen and maybe others that haven't straight, never made a turn in a race. How does that matter?
I think it does, because they're a very... I mean, so if you look at the older sprint, a horse like Highfield Princess, she's been round a bend a million times, which is quite unusual for a sprinter, so I think she'd be fine. These, they haven't. So I think it is a bit more of a concern.
I would think... I mean, the fact that she's outside and there's no horse out to direct her...
She also... The other thing is, if you watch her run in the Nunthorpe, she gets a bit unbalanced, and she's done that a couple of times. I mean, she's going so fast. And she's not like a little rocket.
Right.
She's actually quite scopey, which is why I think she could hack it against older horses. I do worry about her around here a bit, to be honest.
How about this? The rest of this crowd? Because there has been some interest expressed in some of these.
Yeah, Dramatized might be the most talented of them. I worry that she's been on the plane, off the plane, on the plane, off the plane. She's been on and off the plane more times than me, to be honest. But, I mean, in terms of the fact that their intentions to come here, I think they always fancied it, but it was just a question of her well-being. I'd like her were it not for the fact that she hasn't had the ideal prep. And I'm more drawn, I think, to a couple of the colts in here, Persian Force and Mischief Magic. I think they'd be the two that I'd be looking to include in my wagering strategy.
Let's jump quickly to the 2 mile races, Nick, and then we'll get to Saturday. Who do you, you know, Meditate? Obviously,
I think Meditate will win. I know Aidan O'Brien is 0-15 or whatever in this race, and the Europeans haven't got a great record in it. But I don't think it's a great race, and I think she's a very good filly. So I don't see any reason why she shouldn't run really well. The distance will just stretch her a little bit, but the bottom side of her pedigree suggests that she might get it, and I think she's got a quite a clear class edge here. And the Colts race, well, Silver Knot's a nice colt, no doubt. He was impressive at Sandown, and he beat a subsequent Group 1 placed horse last time in Epictetus. So, yeah, he's got credentials, no doubt. But I think this race is a bit more contentious. And I quite like the Chad, and I quite like Wayne Catalano's horse. I think they're quite formidable opponents for him. I think he's got quite a lot on his plate there to beat them.
I picked the Catalano.
So did the trainer. I won't surprise you.
Victoria Road?
I think one's a tricky hole, to be honest.
Yeah. All right. Let's turn to Saturday. Nick Luck with us, and
nice horse though. I mean, seems could like run it. Well.
Turf sprint on Saturday, and if anybody that was impressed with the filly with
High
the two
Field Princess.
Year, yeah, well, Highfield Princess in here, becomes the point of conversation. But there's some interesting imports in here.
Yeah, I see this race quite simply, really, insofar as if she runs the race that she did either in Ireland or at York, she's going to win, and that's notwithstanding what kind of Golden Pal turns up. Because I think if you get that Highfield Princess, she will be fast enough to sit not that far off him, and she will finish the race out better. But obviously what you're asking is for her to show that sort of form round a bend in a different country, having had a long season, and it's a big ask. But I do think that she has the best form this season. Is she much of a bet at the prices? Not necessarily. The horse that I think could run really well, who is 20-1 on the morning line, is Emiratiana, who was fourth last year at Del Mar. Extra half a furlong, track will be more suitable. Stable won it with Glass Slippers. And he is a horse who has his ideal conditions unless it rains. Yeah, the turf will be perfect for him. At the extra half furlong, he's building to a big run. Yeah, I think he'll hit the board. But it should be Golden Pal or Highfield Princess who wins the race.
What's gone wrong with Go Bears Go this year?
No, he's run some nice races, and he ran very well in at Del Mar. So, again, I could see him going well. I think he lacks perhaps the caliber of the aforementioned horses.
Campanelle,
does she want the ground a bit softer? That's the only thing I wondered.
I think it's hard to believe that a horse like this that's made $1 million and is 6 for 10 doesn't seem to get the attention that she deserves.
Yeah, and I think the trainer and the jockey would think the same thing.
Right?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. Pressing forward, Nick Luck with us, and of course, Nick anchoring the NBC telecast. The filly and mare turf, and there has been a groundswell for the three-year-old fillies, Nashua and Above the Curve. It feels like suddenly everybody's drifting in that direction.
Yeah, I feel like that. I mean, I feel pretty confident that Nashua's the best filly in this race. It's a question of what sort of trip she's going to get. I assume Holly Doyle's going to ride her forward, and I think her chance is contingent on how much pace pressure she gets. If this race really is run at a burn-up, which some of my colleagues think it's going to be, then I think it could compromise her a little bit. If in Italian gets out and goes forward and she can slot in behind her and the race is not run at a ridiculous pace, then I think those two fillies will have it between them.
What about Tuesday?
Well, shot. But the thing is, Tuesday needs them to go quick, I think, in order to bring her superior stamina into play. Her best run was when she finished second to Alpinista in the Yorkshire Oaks. So there's a stable companion in there in Toy. I think Toy's role is to make this a proper test and to make sure that the other Coolmore horses, Above the Curve and Tuesday, can get into it.
Well, and for those, because there's been the dialogue about in Italian nursing this on the front end.
Well, she's not going to nurse it on the front end if Toy's got anything to do with it. So there you are. So that's why I sort of think, well, one part of my brain thinks keep this simple, Nashua's just the best of these, and the other part of me thinks there's scenarios that I don't like for her.
And that's one of them. There is one horse in here at a monster price, Mise en Scène, that has got some. That's got a.
Well, it would be ironic, given what we were talking about before, that James Ferguson spent a week and a half in Melbourne with every single journalist in the entire country, you know, in his within 5 feet of him, trying to get quotes off him because he trained the favourite for the Melbourne Cup, who actually ran really well and finished fourth. And then he comes to America, and no one wants to go anywhere near him. And then he came up and won a Breeders' Cup race with a horse at 40-1. She shouldn't be good enough, but stranger things have happened, I suppose.
That's right.
She says she's in better form now than she has been all year. If that's of any help.
There you go. And
so it sounds like in Italian is going to be the key to the race.
In Italian, we know what she's going to do.
Right.
It's just a question of who else is around.
I mean, I hearken back to her race 2 ago when she went 9 and change in the Diana and basically just, you know, run them off their feet. Whether she's going to do that here a little bit longer, I'm not sure. But now that
Chad loves this race at this distance. You know, he loves the 9 here in Del Mar. Because they could have gone to 11 1 year. Do you remember the year when Lady Eli was having her swan song, and they could have gone to 11 furlongs at Del Mar, and they cut back, they went to 9?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And there was a bit of an argument about it. But, you know, it's always going to play in his favor. It's going to play in Chad's favor if it's 9 rather than 11.
Right, and so now we're a 60th of a mile longer, which is not, you know, mile and a quarter, mile and a half area. And that's why she... You know, she's got a shot up there. But now that you mentioned Toy into the program, that's great information.
Nick, I do want to go back to one thing on Friday that we glossed over because her name came up in conversation this week, and it's one of those great stories. And since you brought up Ferguson, Willie Brown and Spirit Gal.
Yeah, so Willie Brown is best known as a consigner of breeze-up horses and has made his business out of it. And this is one that they couldn't shift, and... Here she is, ended up in a Breeders' Cup. Now, she won well at Dundalk last time. She beat a filly that was on the list to come here of Aidan O'Brien's. So you got to give her a due, and it's a good story. But I don't think she's as good as Meditate, put it that way.
I wanted to get it in because I knew, you know, that your intimate knowledge and experience, and it seems like it's a story that you know, that needs to get out there. Let's talk about the mile, and if there's a, you know, if there is a lightning rod horse to a certain degree, it's Modern Games, Nick, after the fiasco last year, you know, he's going to be a short price, and it seems like there's two camps, those all in and those that want nothing to do with him.
Well, I'm in neither camp, I'm afraid. I'm neither all in nor want nothing to do with him. I mean, I think he's the likeliest winner of the race. I just wish he hadn't run at Ascot. You know, I'm not saying that necessarily did him any harm. It's just, you've gone to Woodbine, run off your face, put up a career best, and you've gone in the mud at Ascot and been beaten by an inferior horse because it's not really your bag going up a straight mile on soft ground, and then you're asking him to come back to the sort of form he's at off the plane again. Like, it's just a big, you know...
Then why... This is not an organization, Godolphin and Appleby...
Why did they run him at Ascot?
...that makes mistakes
they
like
didn't,
that.
It wasn't a mistake. I mean, it was there. It was a very valuable race. Don't forget, he was after the Trainers' Championship as well at the same time. There was a lot of money at stake, and it was sitting up there begging to be taken. So, and it only just didn't come off.
I get it.
Who do I like in this race? I think this could be Annapolis' race. From a betting point of view, I think that's the way you've got to play it, because Modern Game's going to be so short, I can watch him win at that price. And Kinross is parked out wide on ground that might be a bit quick and over a distance that is... He'll probably get a mile, but it's only a probably. So I think given you've got a really good improving three-year-old from a top stable who's won at the track, won a really good race last time, in a good time, Annapolis will do it for me.
Tell us about Pogo and Dreamloper.
Well, Pogo will make the running, I think. I mean, my broadcast colleagues don't agree with me because they never think that a European horse is going to be quick enough to go to the lead, but I think he will make the running from one. They're going to have to drill him forward, and he's tactical too. He doesn't really get a mile.
How about Dreamloper for Ed Walker?
Well, she's on official ratings. She's got a good chance. But it's a question of the extent to which you believe or take literally 5 lengths over Order of Australia in France. If you take it literally, then she's interesting. And it wasn't soft ground that day either. The French going descriptions are terrible.
Speaking of soft ground, out of the Prix de la Forêt, Malavath comes back to North America and is going to be completely ignored.
Yeah, and she's run well, and she's just the type of crazy horse that runs well in Breeders' Cups. She really is. I mean, I wouldn't put anybody off sticking her in for tries and supers. I think she'd probably run quite well. I can't quite see her winning, but
18-1 last year, beaten a half length. Nick has got to wrap up, so let's quickly look at the turf and
the turf. I think this is the hardest race on the entire weekend. I really do. I think it's borderline impossible, unless you think the only straightforward way of looking at it is if you think Mishriff is going to run to his best. In which case, then he just wins because he's the best horse. But
is he still the best horse?
Who knows? Haven't got a clue. Have not got a clue what to expect of him. He's got blinkers on for the first time, which I don't exactly think is a plus. Frankie says he's been working very well.
All right. Well, then I want to bring up Rebel's Romance, and you know, one of the things that some people have said, they're like that it doesn't take into account some of the unusual conditions in European racing. He's a gelding, and so ineligible for certain standards, right? Is that why he was campaigned at Hopgarten and
Cologne? No, there'd have been plenty of races he could have run.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I think Charlie quite likes the German route into these big races. They were trying to get his career back on track as well after it sort of all went awry on the dirt in Dubai. He's a pretty good horse, actually. I think it would have been more difficult between the two for William Buick to choose than he's let on. I think I don't know who's going to win this race. I think it's very difficult. None of the form lines intertwine. I haven't got a clue how good Warlike Goddess really is, because I don't think we really know yet in this sort of company. I don't know how good the two Godolphins are yet. They could yet materialize into being very good. But it's unproven. I know Mishriff was the best horse in the race, but whether he is still is a moot point. I do think there's a little silly bet in here, and it's Stone Age.
He's getting plenty of mention.
Well, he was only a tiny bit behind Nation's Pride. If you put it this way, if Nation's Pride's a 3-1 shot, Stone Age shouldn't be a 16-1 shot.
That's all, really.
I mean, it's a very reductive way of looking at it. But in a race where I've got no strong view, because I haven't got a clue what's going to happen, he was where the pin kind of ended up landing.
I don't understand the Nation's Pride groundswell.
Well, if Mischief Magic wins the Juvenile Turf Sprint and Silver Knot wins the Juvenile Turf, the groundswell will swell even further.
It will be an overflow. Nick, as always, invaluable and wonderful, and I appreciated you saying it can't be a Breeders' Cup if we don't get a visit in with you.
And by the way, isn't it? It's more than 6.5 lengths flight line on that spread that's the bet, isn't it? Wasn't it?
I think that's what it was.
Wasn't it 10-11 each of two flight line over 6.5 under 6.5?
And
if he wins by less than 6.5, he probably won't win.
That's a good point, because I would take the over.
Interesting. That's an interesting perspective.
Don't you think? He's going to win, and it'll be by more than 6.5.
There it is. Nick Luck, everybody.
All right. Nick. I'm sorry I can't stay
longer.
No,
you were wonderful. You were wonderful. Thank you, buddy. Nick
Always
Luck,
a pleasure.
Folks. The absolute greatest. Just
quick, concise,
the greatest.
And full of knowledge.
Period.
I mean,
period.
Off the plane and into the studio.
He's amazing. Let's get to Dave Grenig right now. Dave's waiting for us, and so I don't want to waste time. We'll take the break at the bottom of the hour, and then actually we'll be a little bit all over the board, I think, and we'll have time for you. And are we calling Jimmy? Are we going to get Jimmy's visit in too with you or not? What arrangement?
I got a missed call from him. Let me text
all right,
him and see
so
what's
see,
going on.
You do that, and let me. I'm going to reach for Grenig, and here we go. We'll get Dave. Had been hoping that we'd get an in person, but Dave's making his way over from the hotel in just a little bit. There we go, Dave Grenig, everybody, and just getting there. We go, Dave. Let me position you, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Hammer's with us too, and. Just eager to dive in with you, and any pre-cup thoughts as an overview.
Not really, Steve. I mean, it's been a pretty quiet week for the most part, and you know, but I guess that's good. We didn't have any major catastrophes or controversies, so that's good. The weather's going to be good today. Hopefully, it holds off tomorrow. I know there's a little bit of rain in the forecast, but I think should be set up for two very nice days.
Well, let's with you, you're taking over of the Classic. Let's actually start there, and we'll work our way back from the Classic. And Nick Luck just adjourned his visit, talking about the over-under, about Flightline winning 6.5, the number. But, you know, they put him in the gate for a reason.
Yeah, listen, he's supposed to win. I've heard this a couple of times now, like if he only won by two lengths, it'd be disappointing. I'm not sure to who, you know, the people that are trying to compare him to Secretariat maybe, but I'm sorry, this horse is not Secretariat. He will never be Secretariat. He could win this race by 22 and he's not Secretariat. So he's going to have a six race career, and I'm sorry, that's just not... We don't need to go there, but this is the toughest group of horses he's going to face, and the same thing goes to everybody. Worse, you know, this is going to be the toughest horse any of these horses in here have faced as well. So I think it sets up for an interesting race. I do think he's the best horse in the field. I think he's going to get a really good trip, and he's not going to, you know, it's an 8-horse field. He shouldn't find any trouble. He's got enough tactical speed that he should be sitting right off of Life is Good. Or if he wants to lead and, you know, Life is Good doesn't, then maybe he'll just take the lead and do what, American Pharoah did 7 years ago. I haven't played out the scenario yet in my head that sees how he gets beat. Watching him train has been impressive. You know, watching him run the Pacific Classic was jaw dropping, but watching him train every day, you could see how he got to that performance, you know. So I just think it's going to be fun to watch him, and then it's going to be sad when they say in a couple of days that he won't run again.
You know, I have not been watching comments from from the connection, whether it's the ownership side or from Sadler. Is he being peppered with those questions about because they did hint that that they might take that coda style of running in a couple of things after the first of the year. Has that gone away?
I don't know that he's been peppered by it. I think they've sort of deflected it. Anytime it comes up, it's sort of been deflected. I just think, in the behind-the-scenes world of racing and insurance and all that kind of stuff, it's like, I think those are the factors that come into play that people don't necessarily think about. You know, other people think about legacy and finances in terms of what you can win on the racetrack. There is other things too that come into play, what you have to pay to insure the horse versus what you get back. And I'm not well versed in insurance. I don't think I understand my own insurance a lot of times, no less equine insurance. So I think those are the factors that come into play, and that just make it in the end probably the wise decision, financially, to just say, we've done what we've done, and we're moving on.
All right. If there isn't necessarily an upsetter to talk about, who do you expect to run best behind him? Should he vanquish this field?
Well, of the horses that I think have the most upside, and then talk about this race and then moving on to next year of the few that we'll see moving forward, it's Taba. This horse has done a tremendous amount for just five races. He's run five times. He's won two grade ones. That's pretty impressive stuff. And he lost another grade one by a head. And I'm not going to hold the Kentucky Derby against this horse. I mean, it was his third career start in a 20-horse field. He had faced a total of nine horses. Like 11 horses total in his first two starts. And then he's thrown into a 20-horse field. I'm not going to hold that race against him. I thought he ran very well in the Haskell, and he ran tremendous in the Pennsylvania Derby. And I think what you're seeing, at least in talking to my conversations with Mike Smith about the horses, that he's taking that dirt better. You know, he's going to be behind horses. And in Pennsylvania, where the kickback was you know, not easy. And you ask Brad Cox about that with Cyberknife. He kind of felt he went through it pretty well. And then when he tipped outside, he showed that acceleration that Mike says is mostly reserved for grass horses. And that's pretty heavy stuff. And I think this horse has a lot, you know, has improvement in him. He's looked really good on the racetrack. And I went for him for second. Epicenter, look, there's, you know, this horse is rock solid. He's had a great career, a great year. I don't have any knocks on him. I just think it's going to be interesting, you know, for a Taba Epicenter. Hopefully we see that frequently next year, because I think they're two very good horses that you know, are only going to get better at four.
You mentioned Baffert, and Dave, that you wrote this week, and since you mentioned that there really hasn't been, you know, too much hubbub or you know, controversy or brush fires, it does seem like we've gotten past, at least to some degree, and I'm sure there are people who will completely bristle at this, but it does seem like after Baffert's successful summer and fall, that you know, he's moving on, and that's certainly what you, you know, the perspective that you offered in the piece this week.
Yeah, I think he's moved on. Look, I guess there's one more bit of you know, some things to be decided in jurisdiction area where, you know, they had to get a new hearing officer for the case that I think ultimately they will lose, but hopefully once that decision is issued, that'll be the end of it. And then everyone can move on. And then once we get past May, I don't know the calendar very well, May, the first Saturday in May next year, and basically all suspensions and things are up, you know, maybe we can just move on. And it hasn't hurt. You know, his owners have moved on because his owners continue to give him top quality stock, which we'll see at 5 o'clock this afternoon when he runs Cape Rock and the Juvenile and National Treasure as well. So I think people are moving on, and it's a good thing, I think.
Well, here's a circumstance that we've got to slip in from the last half hour, 45 minutes. KHRC regulatory vets are not going to let Laurel River run tomorrow,
okay,
Speaking of Baffert, and they're not going to let Bran run in the turf sprint either for John Sadler. So we can now scratch Bran tomorrow and out of the fourth, and Laurel River as well out of the fifth.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was out there this morning, and they were pretty, I was watching, and Bob was out there too, and it looked like the vets were watching some. I wasn't sure which one of his horses, and I guess it became to be Laurel River. So yeah, there we are. I set the over under at 2.5 on scratches, and it was, I think it's, you know, that 4 from the vets, and then the 2 today, or, you know, add the 2 that you mentioned to the Informative and Hot Peppers, and then there were 2 others, American Rocket for Mott and the Juvenile Phillies, and Graham Laurie G in the Juvenile Phillies turf. Their trainers reported those horses to have temperatures, so that's not necessarily related to
right,
the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, but, you know, these two obviously are. And I had a feeling something was up and tried to inquire, but was getting stonewalled a little bit.
I gotcha. Well, we mentioned G. Laurie, which came out last night, and that gets Vicky Oliver in with Bling. There was nobody on the outside looking in the Juvenile Phillies with American Rocket coming out. Junior Alvarado loses the mount. It does move Raging Sea into the 13 hole. It moves Leave No Trace into the 12 and Shoplifter into the 11. So, you know, there is that portion of, you know, of the physical portion. So Bran, Laurel River, American Rocket, G. Laurie, Alluring Angel was an AE, not a big deal. I just retweeted Joaquin Jaime, who put the compendium together. All right, Dave, in that case, let's move backwards then from the classic. How'd you shake out the turf? Because everybody's agreed on one thing, that it's not the best turf edition we've ever seen.
Yeah, I'll concur with that group, with that opinion as well. I think just because I've sort of been a big fan and would hate to see her win without the on board, I went with warlike goddess for the, you know, for in the turf. I think she's obviously going to love the distance. Obviously, she has to work out a trip for Rosario's back on. But the horse that I'm most intrigued in this race about and going to use, will probably throw a few dollars to win and definitely use her underneath warlike goddess, is Red Knight. I think this horse has run some really good races when he's even when he's lost. He got beat a length and a half last time in the Sycamore, and I don't think he had a very good trip. He's run well at Keeneland. I'm intrigued by Luis Saez getting back aboard. Saez has ridden the horse three times. He's got a win in 2 seconds. I know the win was December of 2018. We were all younger then, but I'm just intrigued. I think Maker is going to surprise in a couple of races here, maybe, and I'm hoping this is one of them. Because I think when I reviewed my picks, I think I wound up fairly chalky, but looking for some bombers in other slots, Red Knight is the one that intrigued me. I know that basically Charlie Appleby wins almost every race that he runs in America. But I'm just not that intrigued by, I'm not that enthralled by either Rebel's Romance or Nation's Pride. And Nation's Pride was winning a couple of three-year-old races against, you know, suspect fields. Now, you could say, yes, he beat Annapolis in the Saratoga Derby. That was a mile 3/16. So I think we found out that Annapolis is not a route horse. He likes the mile. But the Jockey Club, to me, was not a very good race. And, you know, the horse, the Gray Wizard, came back out of that race and couldn't win an allowance race, couldn't get close. Rebel's Romance, he's 4-for-4 in the grass. He's 4-for-4 at a mile and a half. I just wonder, you know, he's kind of gone to Germany for his last two starts, and I'm not 100% sure that he's been facing great competition there. So I think they're worth taking a shot against. And I just like I said, I've been a fan of Warlike Goddess for a long time. She's never run a bad race. She's 2-for-2 here. I think that helps. And the bomber underneath for me is Red Knight.
I like that. I'm glad you brought Red Knight into the conversation. That's the first reference to him, and that usually helps some people. Let's talk about this Distaff, Dave, which, you know, we all knew it was going to be a fun race, but then the more you looked at it, and with Society's emergence and her win in the Cotillion, and the way she comes in and knowing where she's going to be running from, you know, on the point, that really kind of enhanced things. Mike Welch, I think, got people to clean their glasses about a horse like Blue Stripe, the way he's just absolutely loved the way she's coming into it. You know, then there's the obvious players. I mean, the only horse that seems a little bit out of place is Awake at Midnight. How'd you shake out in the Distaff?
Yeah, you know, it's a fun race. You're 100% right. And I guess at the end, I came back to the four-year-old, you know, thinking the four-year-olds might just have a little bit of an edge. And Malafat is where I wound up on. She's 3-for-3 at Keeneland. I think she's improved with the blinkers. Now, you know, you go back to the Shuby, and I think it's, you know, she didn't run very well. She got beat by Clarier that day. You know, she was dull. It was a hot day. That was the excuse. And sometimes you can say, oh, that's an excuse. And, you know, you buy it and you don't. I'm buying it just like I bought, that was the excuse for Olympiad when he didn't run very well in the Whitney. It was a very hot day. And then he comes back. He wins the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Now that comes back and wins two races, including the Spinster, which she polished off, you know, nicely. I know it wasn't a great field in the Spinster. But she's beaten good horses before. You know, she's never, in my eyes, never run a bad race. I think she'll get a decent trip, ground saving trip. I hope it's a fair racetrack. I hope she can, you know, come from off the pace. And I guess the key to the race is how much pressure does Search Results put on Society? Because I think that's what everyone's hoping for that are behind her, that, you know, Society just doesn't get out there and, you know, open up five and nobody can catch her. I do have a lot of respect for Society, and she will be on my tickets just because of that. Look, we'll have a good idea how the track's playing by the time they run the Distaff, so I think that's going to come into factor as well. Look, I have no knocks on Nest. I have a ton of respect for Nest, but again, three-year-olds versus four-year-olds, the three-year-old class this summer, I mean, when you look, and I'm not nitpicking, I'm just saying, when you look at what Nest, she's been dominant, but, you know, I think Secret Oath's been over the top for the summer. And she handled Secret Oath easily, but the ones behind her, to me, Goddess of Fire, Nostalgics of the World, aren't that strong. And then when she beat older horses in the Beldame by 9 3/4 lengths, I didn't think that was a great field. So I think this is going to be a test for her. Look, if she passes it, great, because we're going to see, you know, I'm rooting for horses that we're going to see next year, and this is one of them. So, but I do think, I think I'm going to give the nod to her elder stablemate on this particular day.
The Mile has had, you know, it's got a great history. It's always been one of my favorites. This is a really fun 14-horse field. It's got a nice mix of style and of imports and domestics. It has a horse like Domestic Spending, who, you know, if he had, coming off this layoff, just the fact that Chad Brown and Seth Klarman want to run is enough of an endorsement for me, and then draws way outside. If he was in a decent post, he'd be, you know, 9-2. What's your Mile view, Dave?
Yeah, this is one of those races I think you could look at 5 different times and come up with a different top three almost all the time. I guess in this instance, I think I sort of just chickened out and wound up with Modern Games on top. I just thought he's been racing. His race here last year at Del Mar was eye-opening. He's gotten good. His Woodbine Mile was really impressive. I thought he ran okay. And probably not necessarily the style he wants at that soft ground and Ascot. And I think coming back, I think that was a good prep for this race. I think he's going to, you know, get a little bit better type of turf course. So I wound up with Modern Games, a horse in here that I think at a price, I think it'll be a price that I'm intrigued by, is Ibar, just because of his success in Kentucky and at a Mile. I just like his turn of foot as well. I don't know what to do with Domestic Spending. Chad wouldn't try this if he didn't think it was worth trying, but the 14 post just killed him. I thought, he got a couple of bad draws, Chad did, but this was the worst one, and I just think it's a lot to overcome. I really do. So if he wins, it's, you know, like my mentor Joe Hirsch said, always root for the best story, and this particular race, that would be the best story, coming off that long layup to win. But I just don't see it. From there, Smooth Like Straight should run another big race, because he always does. Yeah, you can never not count him out, and it'll be fun. Like you said, it's a fun race.
The sprint. Speaking of scratches and Chad, the Jack Christopher ordeal. I don't know what the right moniker is for what he's gone through. Both of these Breeders' Cups, but his departure from the field certainly took away from this group. And Jackie's Warrior, I gotta say, Dave, if he doesn't win, he kind of exits the stage, a little bit dented in the fender.
I don't disagree. This is a horse that's a borderline Hall of Fame horse, Steve, and I think to push him over the edge, a Breeders' Cup win would need to be on the resume. He's got a tremendous record. He's won a lot of nice races. But I think not having a Breeders' Cup on his resume is lacking. And I'm not going to hold a two-year-old race against him. He wasn't a two-year-old. He wasn't a two-turn horse. And when he got beaten in juvenile, I don't hold that per se against him. And they did try to get on the Triple Crown trail. They ran him in the Southwest, and they realized, hey, we have got a really superior one-turn horse. And once they got that out of the way, he's been a really superior one-turn horse. He didn't run very well in the Breeders' Cup last year, came out with an injury, but he looks fabulous. The pace should set up for that. With Jackie's Warrior out, Jack Christopher out, who's there to challenge Jackie's Warrior? So this should be his day to shine in the sun. And if he does, I think you could make a case in 5 years this is a Hall of Famer. And if he doesn't, I think, like you said, it's a dent in the fender, and it leaves a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth as he goes off to be a stud. But he's been a fun horse to watch and cover, I will say that.
Anybody in here from a gamble standpoint that you've sort of taken a shine to?
I don't know what the prices will be on these horses, but Elite Power might get dismissed because the Bosberg was so weak. But this horse, I wish there was another speed horse to push Jackie's Warrior, because I think this horse benefits from being further back and then coming with a run. I think he'll still do that, come with a run, whether that gets him in the number or not, I'm not sure. And then the other was Manny Wah. Again, I don't remember what they made him on the morning line, but you know, I thought the Phoenix was a solid enough race. It's a good win over the racetrack, and I've liked what I've seen from him in the morning, just watching him gallop and train. You know, his breezes have been good too. So those two were the ones I kind of pulled. And you know, one last one, I guess, Pipeline. You know, Pipeline's got big numbers, but he's still eligible for two other than. So I don't know where you go, but he was trucking around there pretty nicely this morning early. So I think those three I'd throw in underneath.
Well, pipeline for the dirt mile.
Oh, he's in the dirt mile. Sorry. Yeah. Never mind. I'm looking at something else.
Hey, Dave, it's Rick. Real quick, you mentioned some works, and you mentioned Wayne Catalano's other horse. What about Aloha West? Looks like he's been smoking here in the morning.
He has been. I just, you know, it's kind of a weird dynamic, I guess, coming in off the July layoff with not much, you know, not even a whole ton of training. I mean, it's sort of just, it's almost like they just started thinking about this in the first of October. But look, you have to respect what he did here last year. But I think last year he was in a much more tempoed pattern of races, and now he's coming off a, you know, 5 month layoff. I'm not so sure.
But he's been training well. Is that
well?
Yes, he has been training well. Yeah, they've asked, and he's given.
Well, and I'm glad you brought him up, because I think there's some things to, you know, to appreciate, and he's going to be completely forgotten. I mean, here's a defending winner, and CC is in the same boat. We'll get to the filly and mare sprint. It seems like she's, you know, kind of an afterthought to some degree, as well as the defender.
Well, obviously, he's going to need the race to basically happen last year, have it you know, fall apart a little bit, and you know what, it happened last year.
Well, but we don't necessarily have the pace, but you don't necessarily need him to win either. If you're building tickets,
that's my point. If he's fit enough, he can hit fill out your superfecta
exactly.
At 15-1.
Dave, we had a really, really, I thought, fun conversation with Nick Luck about the filly and mare turf, and he included the role of Toy, of her presence in here I don't want to say rabbit, but certainly as, you know, somebody to extend in Italian, and that might be welcome for anybody else that wants to stalk or come from off the pace. And, you know, otherwise, I mean, if in Italian dictates to this group, she'll be very tough to reel in. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, I hope someone runs with it Italian, because I did pick, I think I picked against her. And, you know, she's going from the mile to a mile 3/16, so I don't know how fast she's going to want to go early. I mean, you know, she's had a lot of success at the mile, and then obviously the Diana, she ran a very strong race in the Diana, but that was, I think that was a little bit firmer course than we're going to see on Saturday. So I looked European, and I went with the Gosdens and Najwa. This filly's been quite impressive in her career, 4/7, four for six this year with a couple of group ones. And, I, you know, her Nassau was solid, and, I kind of like her.
All right. How about that dirt mile? You mentioned Pipeline, and with Laurel River coming out, the 9-2 third choice, we have a 10-horse field, and, you know, this feels like a race where people that have, you know, an opinion have a fairly strong opinion, and there's a lot of ways to go. I think I took more time on this race than anything else in doing my write-up.
Look, obviously, if it was a one-turn mile, we'd all be anointing Cody's Wish the winner. I wouldn't necessarily toss him because it's a two-turn race. He ran all right in the Challenger Stakes to begin the year. He only got beat a neck by Scalding, who was a pretty solid horse at the time for Chuck McGahey. But I think I wound up going to Cyber Knight. I think this was the race they were targeting all along. You know, unless Flightline had come out of the Classic. You know, I liked his Haskell. I'm basing it off the Haskell. Is, you know, Travers was, you know, he chased a good horse who wanted to go a mile and a quarter. This horse didn't want to go a mile and a quarter. The Pennsylvania Derby, I just don't think he liked the kickback. If you watch the race going into the first turn, he's eighth, and he's just dirt hitting him in the face, and he's tossing his head about. And I really think that the fact that he actually came and got third was on talent alone. And I think I like the fact that he's drawn to the outside here, and it should have enabled him to avoid the kickback. And that's sort of what I'm basing it on. I think he can lay close. He's got a versatile enough running style where if the speed is not there, he can be right there. And if it is, he can sit right off of it. And, you know, Brad doesn't have a lot of horses in this year's Breeders' Cup, but I think he's got some live chances.
I think what you said, plus the two scratches, moves him from the 9 into the 7. I think that's significant here, going this mile distance.
And it's still, but it also keeps him, you know, still outside of some horses.
Exactly, and he needs to settle a little bit, and he can now. I don't know, that 9, maybe you're forced to do something you don't want to do. The 7 takes a little bit of that pressure off. And
that's true.
And he's proven he belongs with the best of the 3-year-olds, that's for sure. And I think the distance obviously was a problem in the classic, and the mile, although he's never done it, I think it hits him right in the head. So if Drew, who's basically ridden him his last 7, 8, 9 starts, he knows this horse really good. If he runs his best, he wins. I spent more time than Steve did. I had to do this for the write up, and each time a horse went out, first was Jack Christopher, and then it was Laurel Rivers out, and then it's just changed the whole complex of the race. So I don't know what to do with this race, to tell you the truth, at this point.
Turning to the turf sprint here, Dave, and I should note, with Brand coming out, Casadero moves in one, so does Artemis City Limits, who got a big push yesterday from Jay Pribman. He used to do some turf riding, and so
heard him.
And I understand that Dancing Buck. I tell you, it's too bad that Michelle, that this happened the way it did, because Dancing Buck would have been okay in this race for Michelle Nevin had things gone a little differently.
Okay, if you think so, I
not a fan.
I think she's in the, no. I am a fan. I just didn't think she was in the Breeders. I thought the Aqueduct Turf Sprint, which is where she'll wind up, is the absolute perfect spot for for her to go to. I don't think I would have paid $100,000 to run in this race here. Where did I go here? I guess I got a little cute here. I tried to beat Golden Pal, thinking that this won't be a horse that wins 3 Breeders' Cups in a row. And I think I'll end up in Highfield Princess, the French-bred Billy, French-bred mare, who's coming off of, 3 consecutive Group 1 wins. I know that they're at 5 and 6.5, but, I don't see why, if you can win at 5, she can't win at 5.5. So I just she's intriguing to me, the European there, Highfield Princess. And then Wesley's other horses, Campanella, intrigued me a bit, especially with Frankie's getting back on her, and he's ridden her quite well in the times that he has ridden her, and I thought she got a useful prep out of the Kentucky Downs race. So I'm a little bit against Golden Pal here. Even if she wins, I'll salute her, and I'll tip my hat to Wesley for getting it done for a third straight year. But I'm thinking that's not going to happen.
I picked Campanella too, and I agree. I it's just there's too high of a quotient for. One misstep. It's not like we haven't seen Golden Pal not get out of the gate great before. So, you break like a shot. It's one thing, but you don't, and suddenly, this thing gets wide open. All right, that gets us to the Filly and Mare Sprint, and we can take Hot Peppers out of here, Rudy Rod. So leaves us a field of a 12. And it seems like, to me, Dave, this race goes through Belmont.
Belmont. Okay. Which one of Belmonts?
I think both. I picked Frank's Roquette, but obligatory, just as appealing.
I could see them making an impact in here, and obviously obligatory is going to need a pace meltdown. And I think Hot Pepper's coming out hurts her in that regard. I liked trying to find her. You know, I'm going to go with the streaking horse that Chad Brown is bringing in here, Goodnight Olive. This horse has had her issues. She hasn't had a long campaign here as a four-year-old. You know, she's late in her four-year-old year. This is only going to be her seventh career start. But she's gotten better and faster with each race, it seems. She likes the 7/8. I know the Ballerina wasn't a great race, but it was good enough. And Obligatory was in there. And I just think Goodnight Olive is going to sit on the out, you know, sit a stalking trip on the outside, get first run on the race horses like Obligatory. And it seems like he's got her in excellent form right now. And when she's in good form, she's tough to beat.
There it is, the Saturday opinions for Dave Grenig. And Dave, before I let you go, quick run through of today. Anybody you want to really single out on the juvenile card?
Well, I believe K-Rock is going to win the juvenile, but I'm interested in, as a long shot underneath, Lost Ark. I thought he had a very difficult trip in the Breeders' Security, but I thought his two races prior to that were solid, and I thought I thought he deserves an exacta play in there. Other than that, the other horse, I guess it's a juvenile turf. I'm very busy for Chad. I think is going to make his presence felt in that race. So I would look at that horse.
Dave Grenig, everybody, DRF Grenig, and not that Dave hasn't stayed late at Breeders' Cups before, but having taken over for Jay Privman covering the Classic, the last story written will be Dave. So, Dave, great job, and thanks so much for all the coverage leading up.
Thank you, Steve. Good to talk to you, Rick.
Always a pleasure, Dave. Good to see you the other night as well.
Yes, sir.
Dave Grenig, everybody, and I love it. Did talk. We're going to take the break here, and we'll come back with the second half, which will include Scott Shapiro. Get a visit in with Scott. Mike Welch is going to join us, I think, live, because he said he's coming over from the hotel shortly. So we'll see Mike Welch here to close things out in terms of the last opinions and the last views from through the binoculars, as they say. We'll check in with Popo in hour three as well. And what was the verdict for your picks with Jimmy? Is Jimmy a go?
Has not
responded
yet.
Wow. Wow, that's shocking. All right. Marcus Hirsch has got, he's doing the players show, the simulcast show. So he is tied up himself. I asked him for his best opinions for those that haven't taken the package from DRF, and he's got an interesting. It's very interesting. He actually leaned on today. Pleasant Passage is one of his big pushes today, and then Pleasant Passage for the juvenile Phillies turf. And I think he liked, not Saturday, he liked Mischief Magic. Mischief Magic for Marcus. Those are when I asked him for his two best opinions, that's what he's come back with. Mischief Magic in the juvenile turf sprint and Pleasant Passage for the juvenile Phillies turf.
You know, Steve, after sitting here all week and had, 15 plus guests, very knowledgeable guests, and listening to their opinions, you know, as you try and keep what you like, and then you hear, hear Nick Luck talking about it.
Hear Nick Luck, he'll change all your opinions.
Exactly, you're moving left. And then we hear Kelly on the foreigner stuff. I make my little marks on that, and then I'm looking, I go, what was that mark for? And then someone else comes on, and we hear from Dave, and I hear from Marty. It's like, oh my gosh, I gotta clear my head. So last night, at least for today, I wrote down numbers, I'm done, see you later. But it's great, it's just great to hear, and it's one of those days, it's one of those events that you can't counter, because there's so many points on so many races, and you know, people handicap differently, and they can look at it and you go, okay, I get it. Not too many throwouts here.
That's the key, is how difficult it is to eliminate horses. I mean, you can, obviously, there's some to you eliminate. But then the ones that are mysterious that we just don't, that's why the European analysis ends up being so big here. And, you know, then there's the ones changing. We got surface changes to deal with, like in the juvenile turf sprint. We've got stretch outs, the two-turn, one-turn. There's, I mean, so many of those equations. Let's take the break. We'll come right back, second half, live at Breeders' Cup at the races, Sirius XM.